Smoke fashioned two crosses of wood and hammered the stakes into the ground at the head of each grave. He walked down to the creek bank, to the boulder where he had chipped Preacher's name. He added two more names. Smoke gathered up all the weapons of the dead bounty hunters and put them in the cabin. He had made up his mind to change to the Army 44s. He would pick out the best two later. There'd be ample shot and powder. He dragged the bodies of the dead bounty hunters far out into the plain, leaving them for the wolves, the coyotes, and the buzzards, the latter already circling. It was late afternoon, and the dark shadows of blue and purple were deepening. On a ridge to the northeast, Felter watched as best he could through field glasses until it became too dark to see.
He buried his wife and kid, drug the other bodies out in the plain, and he staked out Clark on an anthill.
That bastard!
He ain't no more bastard than us. He's just tougher than Rawhide and meaner than a grizzly, that's all. Madder than hell, too.
Felter gazed down into the dark valley. He could not help but feel grudging admiration for the man called Smoke. That wouldn't prevent him from killing Smoke when the time and place presented itself, but it was good to know at last what type of man he'd be going up against. Felter was one of the best at the quick draw, but he always figured why tempt fate when shooting a man in the back was so much safer. But with this man called Smoke, he would have to be very careful how he set up that ambush, because Smoke had been trained by the old mountain man Preacher, and now Felter knew Smoke was as dangerous as a cornered grizzly. It would not be easy, but it could be done. Long before the first light touched the mountains in the valley, creating that morning's panorama of color, Smoke was up and moving. He rode across the valley, stopping out of range of rifles by a stand of cottonwoods. He calmly and arrogantly built a cook fire. He put on coffee to boil and sliced bacon into a pan. He speared out the bacon and dropped slices of potatoes into the grease, frying them crisp. With hot coffee and hot food and a hunk of Nicole's fresh baked bread, Smoke settled down for a leisurely breakfast. He knew the outlaws were watching him. He had seen the sun glint off glass yesterday afternoon. In fact, Canning had his eye to the spyglass at that very moment.
That bastard!
Relax. He's just trying to make us do something stupid. Stay put.
I'd like to go down there and call him out.
The kid's bravado had returned from his sucking on the laudanum bottle all night.
You just stay put. Rest your butt. We got time. There's just one of him and four of us.
We was twice that yesterday.
The valley upon which the outlaws gazed and where Smoke was eating his quiet breakfast as Seven munched on young spring grass was wild in its grandeur. It was several miles wide, many miles long, with rugged peaks on the north end, far in the distance, snow-covered most of the time, with thick forests, and many dead-end canyons, one of which was only a few miles from where Smoke sat. He felt sure the bounty hunters didn't know it was a box. Its look was deceiving. Smoke cleaned up his skillet and plate and then set about checking out the two Remington 44s he had chosen from the pile of guns. Preacher had been after him for several years to switch, and Smoke had fired and handled Preacher's Remington 44 many times, liking the feel of the weapon, the balance. And he was just as fast with the slightly heavier weapon as he was with the others. He spent an hour or more rigging holsters for his new guns, then spent a few minutes drawing and firing them. To his surprise, he found the weapon, with its sleeker form and more laid-back hammer, increased his speed. Mountain up, he rode slowly to the northeast, always keeping out of rifle range and very wary of any ambush. When Smoke disappeared into the timber, Felter made his move.
All right, he's heading out. Let's ride. Let's get the hell out of here.
But after several hours, Felter realized they were being pushed towards the northwest, because every time they tried to veer off,
God damn it!
A shot from the big sharps would keep them going in the same direction. And it was like that all day. As long as they continued on a northwesterly course, Smoke left them alone.
Son of a of a bitch!
On the second day of being herded, Canning brought his horse up sharply, hurting the animal's mouth with the bit.
Have I had it with this shit?
They were tired and hungry, because Smoke had harassed them with the sharps every hour this morning. Felter looked around him at the high walls of the canyon, sloping upward, green and brown with timber. He smiled ruefully. They were now the hunted. A dozen times in the past 2 days they had tried to bushwhack Smoke, but he was as elusive as his name.
We better do something, because we're in a box canyon.
I'll take him. Rest you ride up on about a mile or two. Get set in case I miss, but I ain't gonna miss.
All right, see you in a couple of hours. Let's go!
No shots. It's been 3 hours.
Sam sat quietly. Everything about this job had turned sour.
Wait! I see a horse coming! Yeah, it's Cannon!
By God, he said he'd get him!
Woo!
And he did!
Felter wasn't so sure about that. He'd smelled wood smoke about an hour back. That didn't fit any plan they'd discussed. And Canning wasn't sitting his horse right.
What the hell's he hollering for? My ass hurts a lot more than anything he could have wrong with him.
Felter scrambled down the gravel and brush-covered slope and halted Canning's frightened horse. He recoiled in horror at the sight of Canning's blood-soaked crotch.
My private! Smoke waylaid me, gilded me, cauterized me with a running eye.
Cannon passed out.
God damn. Sam, give me a hand.
Felter and Sam dragged the man into the brush and looked at the awful wound. Smoke had heated a running iron and seared the wound, stopping most of the bleeding. Felter figured Cannon would live, but his raping days were sure as hell over. And Felter knew with a sudden realization that he wanted no more the man called Smoke. Not without about 20 men backing him up, that is. Using a spare shirt from his saddlebags, Felter made a crude bandage for Canning. But it was going to be hell on the man sitting a saddle. He looked around him. That fool Kid Austin was walking down to the floor of the canyon, his hands poised over his twin Colts. An empty laudanum bottle lay on the ground.
Get back here, you fool!
Come on, Smoke! I'm gonna kill you!
Idiot. Hell with you, kid!
Felter and Sam tied Cannon in the saddle and rode off, up the slope of the canyon wall, high up near the crest. There, they found a hole that just might get them free. Raking their horses' sides, the animals fought for footing, digging and sliding in the loose rock. The horses realized they had to make it or die. With one final lunge, the horses cleared the crest and stood on firm ground, trembling from fear and exhaustion. As they rested the animals, they looked down for the kid. Austin was lost from sight. They rode off to the north, toward a mining camp where Richards had said he would leave word or send more men should this crew fail. And they had damn sure failed. Austin, his horse forgotten, his mind numb by overdoses of laudanum, stumbled down the rocky floor of the canyon. He pulled up short when he spotted his quarry. Smoke sat calmly on a huge rock, munching on a cold biscuit.
Oh, get up! Get on your feet and face me like a man oughta!
Smoke finished his meager meal, then slowly rose to his feet. He was smiling. Kid Austin walked on, narrowing the distance, finally stopping about 30 feet from Smoke.
I'll be known as the man who killed Smoke Jensen. Me, Kid Austin. Well, I done it to your wife too, Jensen. She liked it so much she asked me to do it to her some more. So I obliged her. I took your woman. Now I'ma take you.
Austin dipped his right hand downward. Austin tried to pull his guns from leather, but his hands wouldn't respond to the commands from his brain.
I'm Kid Austin! You can't do this to me!
I did, though.
Smoke turned away from the dying man and walked back to Seven.
Yeah. Yeah.
He rode off without looking back.
Mama! It hurts, Mama! Mama!
Smoke rode back to the cabin in the valley and packed his belongings, covering the pack frame with a ground sheet. He rubbed Seven down and fed him grain and hay, stabling him in the lean-to. He cleaned his guns and made camp outside the cabin. He couldn't bear to sleep inside that house of death. His sleep was restless during those starry nights of the first week back in the valley. His sleep was troubled by nightmares of Nicole calling out his name, of the babies dying. The second week was no better, his sleep interrupted by the same nightmares. So when he kicked out of his blankets on this final morning in the valley, his body covered with sweat, Smoke knew he would never rest well until the men who were responsible for this tragedy were dead. Potter, Stratton, and Richards. Smoke bathed in the creek, doing so quickly, for the creek and the mossy bank also held memories that he didn't want to deal with. Smoke saddled Seven and cinched the pack on a pack horse, then went to the graves by the cabin, hat in hand, to visit with his wife and son.
I don't know that I will ever return. I wish it could have been different, Nicole. I wish we could have lived out our lives in peace, together, raising our family. I wish a lot of things. Goodbye.
With tears in his eyes, he mounted Seven and rode away, pointing the nose of the big spotted horse north. In a settlement on the banks of the Uncompahgre, Felter and Sam and Cannon were telling a much different version of what happened in the cabin in the valley.
Oh, I'm telling you, boys, I ain't never seen nothing like it. Them murdering Utes raped the woman, killed her and the baby, then scalped them. Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah, then that outlaw, Smoke Jensen, he all of a sudden comes up on us, shooting. He killed Grissom and Evans right off. Just shot them dead for no reason. He went crazy, I guess. Stampeded our horses, and Felter and me took cover in a waller. He took our horses.
The time we worked our way out, this Smoke had killed the rest of our crew and staked out Clark on an anthill. Stripped him naked and poured honey all over him. Wasn't nothing we could do for him. You boys know how hard a man dies like that.
The miners listened silently.
And I found Canning. And you all know what was done to him. Most awful thing I ever seen one white man do to another. Kid Austin was shot in the back. Never even had a chance to pull his guns.
Some of the miners believed Felter, but most did not. They knew about Smoke and the stories told of him, and they knew about Felter and his scummy crew. Some of them had known Preacher and knew the mountain man wouldn't take a murderer to raise as his son. The general consensus was that Felter and Sam and Cannon were bald-faced liars. Felter had not told him of the men riding hard toward the camp, men sent by Richards and Stratton and Potter. That message was waiting for Felter when he arrived at the miners' camp. Although the trail of Felter was 3 weeks old, it was not that difficult to follow. A bloody bandage from Canning's wounds, a carelessly doused campfire, an empty bottle of laudanum, several pints of whiskey. It all pointed toward the silver camp near the Uncompahgre, and it also meant Felter was probably expecting more men to join him. That thought lay bitter on his mind as Smoke rode, following the trail with dogged determination. Just south of what would soon be named Telluride, in the gray granite mountains, two miners stopped the young man on the spotted horse, stopped him warily.
I was told you'd be riding a big spotted horse with a mean look in its eyes. I ain't trying to be nosy, but if you're the man called Smoke, I got news.
I'm Smoke.
About 14 salty old boys waiting for you at the Silver Camp. Most of us figure Felter lied about what happened at your cabin. What did happen?
Smoke told him everything. He left nothing out.
That's about the way we had it figured. Son, you can't go up again all them folks, no matter how you feel. That'd be foolish. There's too many.
They're gun hands for Potter or Richards or Stratton. I intend to kill them.
Appears to me, son, they about wiped out your whole family.
Yeah, but they made one mistake.
What's that?
They left me alive.
How the tall young man managed to engine up on him, the miner didn't know. He was woods-wise, and yet he hadn't heard a twig snap or a leaf rustle. Just that sudden cold sensation of a rifle muzzle pressed against his neck.
A name, Smoke. If you got friends in that camp, you go down and very quietly tell them to ease out. 'Cause in 1 hour, I'm opening this dance.
My name's Big Jake Johnson, Mr. Smoke, and I'm on your side.
Smoke removed the muzzle from the man's neck.
Thank you.
Do it without alarming Felter and his crew.
Consider it done. But Smoke, there's 14 hard cases in that camp, and they're waiting for you.
They won't have long to wait.
A short time later, the mining camp, one long, dusty street with tents and rough shacks on both sides, looked deserted as Smoke gazed down from his position on the side of a sloping canyon wall. Big Jake Johnson had done his part well. The miners had left the camp, retreating to a spot on the northwest side of the canyon. There, they would have a grandstand view of the fight.
Felter! You and Canning want to settle this between us? I'll meet you both! Stand up! 2-1! How about it?
Below, in a saloon that was little more than a shack, Felter crouched behind a huge packing crate. No one in his right mind would trust the thin walls to protect him. A Henry 44 could punch through 4 inches of pine.
Give us the gold your daddy stole, then you just ride on out of here.
My pa didn't steal any gold! He just took what your bosses stole from the south after they murdered my brother, and I don't have it!
Smoke shifted positions, slipping about 25 yards to his right. He had seen a man dart from a camp, working his way up the side of the hill. He watched the man pause and get set for a shot. Smoke raised his Henry.
13 to go.
Smoke again shifted positions. He watched as men fanned out into the town, moving too quickly for him to get a shot at.
You boys riding with Felter? You sure you want to stay with this dance? The music's gonna get mighty fierce in a minute.
You go to hell.
Two men sprang from behind a building, rifles in their hands. They ran into a shack, and Smoke opened up on the building. One of the men stumbled back out into the street, dropping his rifle. He was followed by the second man, his chest and belly crimson. Smoke shifted positions once more.
Any more you boys want to dance to my music?
Inside the saloon, Canning looked at Felter. Both of them now crouched behind the packing crate.
The hell with the gold, Felter. I'll settle for the 8,000. Let's rush him.
Felter was thoughtful for a moment. His whole plan was screwed up. Nothing had worked right from the beginning. Smoke was pure devil, right out of hell. The cabin they had searched had been clean, but poor in worldly goods. Smoke didn't have the gold. For all Felter knew, his pa could have spent it on whiskey and whores. The only thing Felter did know was that he could not fail twice. He could never set foot in the Idaho territory if he botched this job. And the way it looked, it was going to be another screw-up.
Can you ride, Canning?
I'll do anything, as long as I can take him alive, so as I can use my knife on him. Listen to him scream!
All right, then. This time, by God, let's take him. Lefty, take the back door out of here. Stay low and talk to the boys outside. Have him pass the word around to the others. I want 3 men to the right, 3 men to the left, 3 to stay in town, and 2 to circle around that bastard up there, coming in from the rear.
You got it!
Unfortunately for them, Smoke had other ideas, and he soon put them into play.
He's not up there anymore. The hombre's in town.
Holy shit.
Outside in an alley, Smoke watched a short, hairy man run down the side of the street, darting in and out of the doorways.
Hey, buddy, over here.
Huh?
Smoke pulled both triggers of a shotgun he had removed from under the counter of a tent saloon. Smoke reloaded the sawed-off as he ducked down the alley, behind a shack, and up that alley. Suddenly, he was face to face with an ugly bounty hunter.
Gotcha, you bastard.
The lead creased Smoke's left arm. He raised the shotgun. The man's head literally left his shoulders. Smoke sidestepped into a recessed doorway just as another man ran toward him, his fist full of 45s. Splinters from the door frame jabbed painfully into Smoke's cheek, and he dropped the shotgun and grabbed his 44s.
He's in that doorway! Kill the bastard!
Smoke felt a hot sear of pain in his right leg. The leg buckled. Smoke charged out of the doorway, firing. He flung himself behind the protection of the trough as Canning hobbled painfully down the street, his hands full of guns, his eyes wild with hate. One of Canning's slugs hit Smoke in the left side, passing through the fleshy part and exiting out the back. The shock spun him around. Smoke managed to raise up on one elbow and level a 44. Smoke shot Cannon in the right eye, taking off part of his face. Canning's legs jerked out from under him, and he fell on his back, his left eye open and staring in disbelief. Smoke hobbled up and jerked pistols from the headless outlaw's belt and hand, just as Sam and another man ran into the smoky, dusty street, trying to find a target through the haze.
There he is! Kill him!
A slug ricocheted off a rock in the street, part of the lead hitting Smoke in the chest, bringing blood. Smoke dragged himself into an alleyway and quickly reloaded all four 44s. He was bleeding from wounds in his side, his leg, his face, and his chest. But he was also mad as hell. He looked around for a target, shoving the fully loaded spare 44s behind his belt.
I'm gonna kill you, Jensen, just like I did your pretty little bitch.
Sam died in the center of the street in a bowing position, his head resting on the dirt, his hat blowing away as a gust of wind whipped between the tents and shacks. Suddenly, hot lead was flying down the alley. Smoke limped and ran behind a building, pausing to reload and catch his breath. It had been said that it's hard to stop a man who knows he's in the right and just keeps on coming. Well, Smoke knew he was in the right, and he just kept on coming. Another of Felter's men ran across the street, down the dirt walkway and into the open alleyway, just as Smoke stepped away from the building. The last man still on his feet ran out of a shack behind Smoke. Smoke coolly lifted a 44. It was almost over. Smoke dropped the spare 44s in the dirt, then reloaded his Remingtons. Inside the shack, Felter still sat behind kegs of beer where he had watched it all. He had had a dozen or more opportunities to shoot Smoke from ambush, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. Jensen was too much of a man. He poured himself a shot of whiskey and shook his head. What he had seen was the stuff legends were made of.
Felter! Step out here and face me!
Felter rose to his feet.
I believe I can take you now, Smoke. You gotta be running out of steam.
Smoke was carefully wiping his hands free of sweat just as Felter stepped out of the saloon. Both men's guns were in leather. Felter held the shot glass of whiskey in his left hand. Smoke's right thumb was hooked behind his gun belt, just over the buckle. 25 feet separated him when Felter stopped. Above him, on the hillside, the miners watched, breathless, silent.
I seen it, but it's tough for me to believe. You played hell with my men.
Smoke said nothing.
You and me now, huh, kid?
That's it. And then I take out your bosses.
Felter sipped his whiskey.
I just don't think you can beat me, kid.
One way to find out.
You're not scared, huh, Smoke?
I'm not afraid of you or any other man on the face of this earth.
You know, your wife sure looked pretty naked.
Smoke grinned like a death's head.
I'm glad you think so, Felter. Because you'll never see another woman.
Damn. Guess I'm not gonna make you mad, am I? All right. You ready, Smoke?
Anytime.
Now.
Black smoke filled Felter's vision. The bounty hunter was still on his feet, but there was something very wrong. He looked down.
Empty.
Felter's hands were empty. Then the shock of his wounds hit him hard. He hadn't even cleared leather. He steadied his eyes to see if he could be wrong. Smoke's left-hand holster was empty. He watched the kid shove the 44 back into leather.
No way.
Felter reached for his Colt and lifted it. His movement seemed slow to him. Something blurred in front of him. He felt the fury of a slug in the stomach. The hand with the Colt had dropped to his blood-spattered side. He lifted it again. Filter flew backwards and landed under the striped pole of a tent barber shop. Unable to rise, he still managed to get his pistol up and pointed.
Now I've got you.
The shot blew off Felter's jaw. The bullet ricocheted off bone and hit the barber pole, spinning it. It was over. Smoke sank to his knees in the dirt.
You hit hard, son. You can't just ride out bleeding like that.
Smoke swung into the saddle, gathering the reins in his left hand, the pack horse rope in his right.
I'll be all right.
Smoke had cleaned his wounds in town. Now he needed the high country, where he could make poultices of herbs and wildflowers, as Preacher had taught him.
When you boys plant them, put on their headboards that Smoke Jensen was right, and they were wrong. Yeah!
Boys, we just seen us a living legend. You remember his name, 'cause we all gonna be hearing a lot more about that feller.
For a month, Smoke tended to his wounds and rested at his camp on the banks of the San Miguel, on the west side of the Uncompahgre Forest. He ate well of venison, he fished in the river, and he made stews of wild potatoes and onions and rabbit and squirrel. He slept 12 to 15 hours a day, feeling his strength slowly returning to him. And he dreamed his dreams of Nicole, her soft arms soothing him, melting away the hurt and fever, calming his sleep, loving him back to health. At the beginning of the fifth week, he knew he was ready to ride, ready to move, and he carefully checked his guns, cleaning them, rubbing oil into the pockets of his holsters, until the deadly .44s fitted in and out smoothly. Then he packed his gear and rode on out. In the southwestern corner of Wyoming, a wanted poster tacked to a tree brought him up short.
Wanted. Dead or alive. The outlaw and murderer Smoke Jensen. $10,000 reward. Contact the sheriff at Bury, Idaho Territory.
Smoke removed the wanted flyer and carefully folded it, tucking it into his pocket. He looked up to watch an eagle soar high above him, gliding majestically northwestward.
Take a message with you, Eagle. Tell Potter and Richards and Stratton and all their gun hands I'm coming to kill them. For my pa, for Preacher, for my son, and for making me an outlaw. And they'll die just as hard as Nicole did. You tell them, Eagle, I'm coming after them.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number one, the last Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1985, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Sherry Simpson, David Korn, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, James Konacek, Jason Stiles, Christopher Graybill, Jonathan Watkins, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Stephen Carpenter, Nanette Savard, and Johann Detweiler. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Chris Rowan. The Smoke Jensen theme was composed by Johann Detweiler. Additional original music by Brian Patton and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagle series, all available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all of our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
The demon dactyl came awake. It didn't seem such a momentous thing, just a gradual stirring in a deep cave in a far, empty mountain. An unnoticed event, seen by none save the caveworms and those few insomniacs among the bevy of weary bats hanging from the high ceiling. But the demon spirit had awakened, had come back from its long dormancy into the statue-like form it had left behind after its last visit to the world called Corona. The tangible, corporeal body felt good to the wandering spirit. The dactyl could feel its blood, hot blood, coursing through its wings and mighty legs, could feel the twitching of its mighty muscles. Its eyes flickered open, but saw only blackness, for the form, left standing in magical stasis in the deep cave, head bowed and wings wrapped tightly about its torso, had been covered by magma. Most of the fiery stuff of that time long past had bubbled and flowed away from the cavern, but enough had remained to harden about the dactyl's corporeal form. The spirit had come back to Corona, encased in obsidian. The demon spirit felt deep within itself, summoned its powers, both physical and magical. By sheer will and brute strength, the dactyl flexed its wings. A thin crack ran down the center of the obsidian sarcophagus. The dactyl flexed again. It stretched its great wings out to the side, clawed tips grasping and rending the air. The dactyl threw back its head and opened wide its mouth. It voiced the sheer joy of its return, the anticipation of the chaos it would bring again to the quiet human kingdoms of Corona. Its torso resembled that of a tall, slender man, shaped and lined by corded strands of taut muscle and sporting a pair of tremendous bat-like wings, 20 feet across when fully extended, and with strength enough to lift a full-grown bull in swift flight. Its head, too, was somewhat human, except more angular, with a narrow jaw and pointed chin. The dactyl's ears were pointed as well, poking up about the demon creature's thin tuft of black hair. Neither did that hair hide the creature's horns, thumb-sized and curling in toward each other at the top of the demon's brow. The texture of its skin was rough and thick, an armored hide, reddish in hue and shiny, as if lit by its own inner glow. Shining, too, were the demon's eyes, pools of liquid black at most times, but shifting to fiery red orbs, living flames, when the demon was agitated. A glow of absolute hatred. The creature flexed and stretched, extended its wings to their full glory, reached and clawed at the air with its human-like arms. The demon extended its fingernails, transformed them into hooked claws, and grew its teeth. Two pointed canines extending down over its bottom lip. Every part of the demon was a weapon. Devastating and deadly. And yet, this demon's real strength lay in its mind and its purpose. The tempter of souls, the twister of hearts, the maker of lies.
How long has it been? How many decades, centuries have passed since my last visit to Corona?
The creature remembered that long-ago time now, savored the thoughts of the streaming blood as army after army had joined in delicious, desperate battle.
Sell them back to Nomeon.
He saw again the elf who had rallied the humans and the other elves, Terranin Denonio, who chased the Dactyl's armies back to the base of the mountain, Adar. Denonio himself had come into this cave after the beast, had skewered the Dactyl. Yet even in its death throes, the Dactyl had won the day, using its willpower to bring up the magma from the bowels of Adar. Denonio and much of his army had been consumed and destroyed.
I am eternal. I have returned. My physical wounds healed. What man, what elf will take Denonio's place?
Its thoughts turned from its enemies to those it would summon as minions. What creatures could the Dactyl gather this time to wage its war?
The goblins, certainly, full of anger and greed, delighting in murder and war. The Formorian giants of the mountains, few in number, but each with the strength of a dozen men, and a hide too thick and tough for a dagger to puncture. And the Powrys, yes, the Powrys. The cunning, warlike dwarves of the Julianthes, the Weathered Isles, who hate the humans above all others.
A line of drool hung low from the Dactyl's mouth as it considered its former and future allies, its army of woe.
I will bring them into my fold. Tribe by tribe, race by race, growing as the night grows when the sun touches the western horizon. Hear me, Corona. Your twilight is at hand. I am awake!
Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's epic saga, The Demon Wars, coming soon.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.